The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra, and it's going to be a busy one with World Cup qualifiers. Nitrous oxide abandoned as England fans reach for carbon monoxide after a game in Kiev. Elsewhere, home nation slump continues. Ireland clapped out and trapped out. Italy, Holland, USA, Argentina and others book their spots. Club football's back, though, and how? In the Premier League, there's Everton, Chelsea, Ozil and Arsenal at the Black Cats, and Brendan Rodgers under pressure as Liverpool face Swansea. All right, they may be league leaders, but they still can't beat the teams above them. Abroad, excitement in Serie A with big derbies and big departures as Inter host Juventus and Samp go up against Genoa. There's posts, tweets and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey, everybody. So delighted to be back again. Barry Glendening's here. Hi, Baz.
Hello.
Oh, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Hello to you, sir. And welcome, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
This is your first of the season, I think, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
All right, then. You're looking awfully bright and cheery.
It's the
lovely
comfy
shirt. I
raging.
Know I love the blue on that shirt. Thanks. What a shame this is an audio production.
My wife hates this. She really? Took one look at me when I left the house and she just shook her head. There was
it the short
there.
Sleeves or
the shirt
nature?
She was...
That is a standard reaction to me leaving the house, in fairness.
Right. She misses
that
you.
I'm reaching for the phone for some reason. I don't know why.
Ian.
I said earlier he looked quite raffish. The side parting. He's a
right. Parker.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, part one, it's all about World Cup qualifying. And that means it's all about Ukraine-England. Yeah. This match is like watching two mums play FIFA, wrote Graham Sibley. ITV were quite happy. I wisely chose the highlights option on this and saw their
it must have been a very short programme.
Yeah. Well, their condensed version, a little bit, they seemed quite happy about it. They didn't seem in any way perplexed by it.
Who was happy? Was it Andy Townsend?
Adrian Charles, who pretty much gave the game away in his opening link, which I thought was a bit off, and Andy Townsend and Lee Dixon. Yeah,
maybe,
there was no kind of
maybe they just don't want to lose the rights, because that's what happened to the BBC when they criticised too much. And, you know, we've seen Gary Lineker, they get a bit prickly.
Are you suggesting
criticism.
That the FA award the rights based on criticism as opposed to large pots of cash?
I think that's what happened after the World Cup.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. What would your take have been?
My take would have been it was not a very high-quality game, as Roy Hodgson said, which was a little bit worrying, given what he said about the Manchester United v Chelsea game a couple of weeks ago, which said it was the best game of the season, when it was probably comfortably one of the worst. But I guess what you have to say is that it was a good result for England, and mitigating circumstances that they didn't have Wayne Rooney, Danny Welbeck, Daniel Sturridge, and a couple of other big players as well.
And but, they did have Joe Hart, and they did have...
Well, Joe Hart was very lucky, I think, not to give away a penalty in the first minute. But I think one of the most depressing things that I saw in that match was straight from the kickoff, Lampard to Gerrard in the centre circle, back to Jagielka, one touch out of his foot, and then boomed it up. And from that, Ukraine attacked and should have had a penalty. And it's just... what you get with England is the sense is that the players are just extremely thick.
Right. Are they not Hodgson's latest incarnation of his West Brom kind of football
paradigm?
Maybe
his Liverpool side as well.
Yeah, or his Liverpool, yeah. I mean, you know, I was going to say they're well organised. Were they that well organised? Ukraine had a bundle of chances.
They did. I mean, I think England had a plan, and you can't really argue too much against the idea of bypassing the midfield and going long if you've got... No, you can. It's horrible. It's actually made me stop liking football. It's like really? A really bad breakup. And I'm going to Tottenham Norwich this weekend. If it's not very good, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need something good and sweet and pure to get me back in, because that was
or
really...
something really rough and shameful and dirty.
That was such an awful game and so soulless. I can just about see the idea that maybe if you knock it long to Ricky Lambert, then... You know, you're going to minimise mistakes in a high risk game where a draw is absolutely okay. But Jesus Christ,
but Lambert's
it was bad.
Much better than that
exactly.
as well. He's not really a big lump. One of the best things he did in the game was that pass through to Walcott.
Well, yeah, that was the only thing of any note from England in the highlights. Was there anything they skipped
out?
They
had a late chance from a long throw where Kyle Walker chucked it in, someone headed it on Lampard, maybe should have scored. But Theo Walcott must be one of the most brainless footballers ever to have existed. He's just so stupid when he has the ball. He's quick, fine, and he can finish. But there was a point where he got the ball in the Ukraine half and hit a pass shin high to Lampard, and it went out for a goal kick from about 30 yards out. He can't play
remember
football.
The one in the second half where he broke down the flank, cut inside, and then just ran into a defender like a dog into a set of patio doors. I was like, what the hell are you doing, man? Look up!
It was one of those nil-nils that not even people who pretend to like nil-nils would have enjoyed.
Right.
And you worry. I mean, they got the result and it's fine, but there seems to be this presumption that they will win their two home games, which on the evidence of that performance, I would say, is far from a foregone conclusion. And also, if that's what they're doing in a high-pressure game against Ukraine, is this what they're going to do at the World Cup as well, when all games are likely to be high pressure?
Well, very important questions, and of course they haven't beaten any of these teams apart from San Marino and Moldova, who are neither of the teams they have to face in the final two qualifiers, which is a bit of a concern. Graham Spencer tweeting, was there any difference between the gritty battling away games back in the day, say Poland 89-91, Italy 97, the famous game in Rome, Turkey 03, and Tuesday's performance? Was it not ever thus?
I think Hodgson's biggest problem, particularly afterwards talking to the journalists, is he's failed to separate the result from the performance. And the result is very good, as Jacob was saying, 0-0 away in Ukraine, that's absolutely fine, we're top, we're in a good position. But to try and convince people that that was a good performance, or that everything went according to plan, when everything looked so shoddy and amateurish, that everyone looked so nervous, terrified of making a mistake, that's where the problem is. And maybe there's rose-tinted glasses here, but I don't remember England looking that bad, that kind of lower league in that sort of game. There was always a certain amount of technical ability. We couldn't string two or three passes together there.
It's about someone like Lampard as well, who we know can play for Chelsea. We know he can play football. And there was just points where he was just passing without even looking, you know, with his back to goal and just flicking it on to nobody in particular. And you wonder why that's the case for when they put on that England shirt.
Hey, passing stats. In the opponent's half, they're really bad. Germany's passing completion rate in the opponent's half is 91.27%. Pretty good. Italy, 85.88. Holland, 83.91. France, 82.96. England, 60.71. Oops. Anyway, there you go. So, it's all set nicely for these two final home games against Montenegro and Poland. And you know, that'll be coming up in, October?
Yeah.
Good. In other news, Poland had a 5-1 win over San Marino. But the big story here at the Stadio Olimpico in Serra Valle was the fact that Alessandro Della Valle scored San Marino's first goal for 5 years. 5 years they've been waiting for that.
What's his other job?
He doesn't have one. He's a professional for San Marino football club Folgore.
Oh, well done to him.
In the San Marino Premier League.
Are there many teams in the San Marino Premier League? I just kind of assumed they'd be like, well, one, and a reserve team.
I genuinely don't know.
No, I've got no idea.
Right. But I'd love to. I tell you what, producer Ben will probably have a go at that. Let's, in the meantime, point out glass very much half full. England are in the top half of their group, and they're the only home nation stroke Ireland that can boast such a lofty position.
A stat I pointed out on Monday,
you've just stolen. Yeah, but it's still true, Barry.
It is true, yes.
Yeah, I can confirm. Scotland won, though, leaping up a whole two places. Remarkable. They had a 2-1 win against Macedonia. Simon Burnton highlighting the remarkable career of one of their scorers.
Akechi Anya, yeah.
Yeah.
Plays for Watford. So I think that's maybe why Simon was so excited about him, being a big Watford fan.
In terms of coming from a completely unlikely origin, he makes Ricky Lambert look like Frank Lampard, really, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Tell us, I've got the notes here from Simon's great thing, but you do it. Do you know the story?
No, not well. I have to look at the notes.
Okay, basically,
he is interesting.
His career began age 16 at Tony Adams's Wickham, where he failed to fulfil his early promise, slipped out of league football. He then had a visit to the Glen Hoddle Academy in Spain, which is for, you know, unemployed footballers. But then he ended up in Spain playing at Celta Vigo. Then he slipped down to the second division for Cadiz. Finally, last summer, anyway, he moved to Watford. And now, at the age of 25, after having started precisely 30 English league games in his career across 8 years and three divisions, he's in the Scotland team scoring in this remarkable win.
Saw him live a few times.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good little player, good little fast player on the wing for them.
Brilliant. Is he actually owned by Watford?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. They can't do that anymore, can they?
Can they not?
No.
Okay. Anyway, so they had that win, and that moves them up to, well, not last anymore. I think above Macedonia, with the Wales now bottom, because they lost to Serbia. Wow, Northern Ireland lost to Luxembourg. How exciting was this? Luxembourg, it was their first victory in a World Cup qualifier since...
1972.
Brilliant, Jacob. Yeah. Only the fourth they've ever, ever had. Well done to Northern Ireland for giving Luxembourg that little ray of sunshine.
Northern Ireland are just an extraordinary team. Like, they can beat Russia, they can run Portugal really close, they've beaten Spain in the not-too-distant past, and then they lose to Luxembourg. It's just bizarre.
They're artists. Yeah, unpredictable.
No, you left England off their conquests against major nations.
Good shout.
Breaking news vis-a-vis number of teams in San Marino. Basically, they have two groups. One of which contains 8 teams. The other one contains 7. I don't know how many football pitches they have. Perhaps producer Ben can look that up as well. While he's doing that, let's just quickly note that population of San Marino, 32,000, which, wow, if they got 15 teams, and let's assume a squad of about 22 players per team, that's about what, Barry, a little bit over 300, is it?
Yeah, the low 300s. But you have to take into account, of these 32,000, probably a third are too old to play football, or too female, assuming these are men's teams.
So you're going to take away a third for being too old and a third to be too young?
Too young,
so the middle third, so maybe 10,000.
And then the middle, probably half the middle third are like us, just too lethargic or fond of
fit
beer.
And able-bodied people.
Yeah.
300 of them are involved.
I'm saying pretty much every single able-bodied person in San Marino
must be a football player.
Is on a football
Basically,
team.
Basically, if you don't get picked for a San Marino league team, that is like being picked last in the playground, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. I have no idea what that feels like, Ian, but...
Well, let me tell you, James, it's not pretty. It's not pretty.
All right. Now, very much not picked last. Very much flying to Rio business class, as the Gazzetta dello Sport proudly trumpeted on Wednesday morning, the Azzurri, who had a 2-1 come-from-behind victory at the Juventus Arena in Turin against Czech Republic, a game which featured 136 caps for Buffon. Well, not all, the 136th cap. And an awful lot of mistakes from Mario Balotelli, who eventually put home the winner from the penalty spot. And the good news, as Gazzetta was pointing out, was the fact that even though he kept missing, the Juve crowd, well, the Turin crowd, didn't give him any stick. And given the precedence there of Juve fans chanting, there are no black Italians, that kind of thing, this was regarded as a good thing.
That's his 25th successful penalty, 25 and 25 for club and country.
He is the greatest penalty taker.
He is the best penalty taker in the world.
Mm.
And he's always on seems to be a pressure one with him as well.
Mm.
Like when City played Dortmund last season, and Weidenfeller came up and was giving him a bit of a few mind games, and afterwards Balotelli just stroked it into the opposite corner, and I think Weidenfeller said something like, I couldn't do anything. I tried, but
yeah.
He's amazing at it. It's a bit like Cantona, it always sends the keeper the wrong way.
You can't out-psych Balotelli, though, can you? No. You'd have to get inside his mind, and I don't think anyone wants to go there.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, behind Italy, it looks like a race between Bulgaria or Denmark. Denmark, we were talking about Armenia, very much the coming team in international football, but they got beaten 1-0 by Denmark in an absolutely terrific game because it featured the worst corner kick ever. If you haven't seen this and you want to brighten your day, have a look at this fellow. Google the worst corner kick ever. It'll come up. It's fantastic. Fantastic.
He gave away a free kick as well for handball.
Oh, did he? The same
well, chance? No, in that move, he fell over.
In that same move?
When he fell over, it's handball and he gave away a free kick.
Gorgeous. All right. Holland are also through. They had a 2-0 win over Andorra, and it looks like Hungary or Turkey for the other spot in that group. France, they're now level with Spain. They ended an 88-year-old record by going over 500 minutes without a goal, but eventually they scored, and it was a big win for them. Were they playing Belarus? There we go. Pogba among the scorers. Russia have moved to the top of Group F with a 3-1 win over Israel. They're going to be through if they can win one of their final two home matches, which is against Azerbaijan, Luxembourg, Northern Ireland defeating Luxembourg, and force Portugal into the playoffs. And Bosnia are at least going to be in the playoffs. And elsewhere, you've got USA beating Mexico. Mexico's misery continues. Costa Rica also through. Argentina looking good. Apparently didn't see this game. Apparently Messi very much at the controls. And I don't know if you saw the Brazil game. They've had quite the week, haven't they? They played Australia and absolutely destroyed them 6-0. And then wee small hours of Tuesday, they played Portugal and beat them 3-1 with that fella Neymar. involved in the first and the third, but his second goal, the second goal, which he scored. Did you see that, Jacob?
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, yeah. Describe it. Paint a picture.
What, picked up about 30 yards away from the Portugal goal, about four defenders maybe around him, and he amazing burst of pace and passed a whole lot of them, including Pepe, who was the one who was left particularly embarrassed. And then there was a couple of guys trying to close in on him, weren't there?
Yeah.
One, I think, was it Quantrao? I couldn't quite tell on the YouTube video, who comes in from the left. Probably left back, wasn't he? And
but
I'm assuming it was him. But he tried to bump him as he shot. But, you know,
it was so nonchalant as he took that shot, given that basically a couple of four pairs of Portuguese feet were coming in on his ankle while he did it. It was just brilliant.
Interesting to see how Pepe takes to that.
Was Pepe doing a kind of chopper Harris to Neymar's George
Best?
No,
he was just left, you know, spinning in his wake, basically.
Spent on the turf. Cool. Uruguay continue their remarkable comeback by maintaining their hold, strengthening their hold of fifth place in the South American group, and maybe even can get into fourth.
They've got a hell of a place to go, though, haven't they? They've got to go up to the mountains.
Exactly. It's Ecuador, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they've got to play Argentina.
And they've got to play Argentina. But Argentina already through. Yeah, they might take the foot off the gas. Otherwise, they'll stay fifth. And they will play, if they stay fifth,
Jordan.
After the drama that, sadly, nobody saw. They had this incredible penalty shootout in the course of which TV company Eurosport lost pictures. And I think there was a blackout from the stadium. And nobody saw this incredible penalty shootout, which included both goalkeepers penenkering each other. Wow, I'd like to see a couple of goalies penenkering each other. Four.
Sounds disgusting.
It does, doesn't it?
You'd have thought the second guy would have just stood up and, you know, waited for it.
Yeah.
Having been done.
Maybe that was the double bluff in it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so Brazil are through, Iran, South Korea, Japan, Australia, USA, Costa Rica, Argentina, Italy, Holland, and more of that sort of stuff in a month's time. Anybody else want to say anything else about the internationals?
Only Ethiopia, who are in the final knockout playoff. They're not seeded, having done their best to screw it up by fielding an ineligible player.
Ooh.
They have still made it. So if they get through their two-legger, Ethiopia will be in the World Cup.
Thanks. Bob Geldof will be delighted with that.
Oh, do you know what we haven't mentioned?
I know exactly what we haven't mentioned.
Right, well, let's mention it then, Barry.
Ireland won't be going to the World Cup. They lost against...
Your loss, World Cup.
Yeah, they went to the land of the Gooser Beer Clinic.
Yeah.
Flanagan's
Good
Irish
times.
Bar.
Yeah.
Oh, happy days.
Yeah.
And lost.
Yeah.
And Giovanni Trapattoni has been relieved of his duties.
Yep. Well, he insisted on Tuesday he wouldn't be resigning, but the next day he went by mutual consent. So what changed his mind? How did they make him an offer that he was not able to refuse?
I would imagine... a lot of it was probably down to Dennis O'Brien, who's a wealthy Irish businessman who supplements the manager's salary at the FAI. And I would imagine the FAI went to him and asked, well, can we sack him or can we pay him off? And that's probably what happened.
Who would you like to see in his place, in his stead?
Who would I like to see? Yes. I would like to see Bielsa take over. that's quite unlikely because I'd imagine nobody at the FAI has ever even heard of him. Looks like it's going to be Martin O'Neill, which I would have no problem with. Hoddle, maybe?
Really?
Glenn Hoddle would be an interesting appointment, although I'm not sure how his views on reincarnation would go down in such a Catholic country
as
the Republic of Ireland. It looks like
Roy Keane also on the FAI's shortlist, apparently.
Yeah, I think if Roy Keane got it, it'd probably be a disaster because he's such a volatile character and who has no time for the FAI. He makes no secret of the fact that he thinks they're all buffoons, and he's pretty right. I like Trapp. You know, he's a nice man. I'd like to have him as a grandfather, maybe, but not necessarily as the manager of my country's football team. Football's left him behind, I think. But it was probably for the best that Ireland don't go to the World Cup because we'd only stink the place up like we did at the Euros.
Oh dear. So farewell then, Giovanni Trapattoni. And so farewell then, part one. We'll be back with more excitement after this. A little bit of other business before we roll on to the excitement awaiting us in the world of club football this weekend. One is the right curious game up in the northeast on Wednesday night, the Steve Harper testimonial. Really perplexing, this, when you look at the players that were there. Milan Glorie, which had the likes of, Massimo Taibbi, of course, but also Daniele Massaro. I mean, Champions League winners, Paolo Maldini, Lentini. Remember Lentini? Pietro Vecchio was in there as well. Or more recent names like Van Bommel. Of course, Di Canio, who got rather clattered, did he not, in the course of the match?
Yeah, by your mate.
Oh, by Joey Barton, that's true, yeah. Excellent. Franco Baresi played. Costa Curta, fantastic.
Fanabir Bolban playing, did I see somewhere?
What is your guess?
Fanabir Bolban, purveyor of the world's most expensive toasted ham and cheese sandwiches.
In which way is he purveyor of the world's most... Oh, in his bar, which you went
bar,
to...
Yeah.
How expensive Zagreb, were they exactly?
Very expensive.
Right.
And he wasn't even there to make them himself.
Well, maybe he was in the kitchen or something.
No, he wasn't. We asked.
Huh.
Crikey. Very disappointing. That Go is all disappointing. That way for a toasty and a
did
beer.
Did you expect him to walk out the kitchen with a hairnet and stuff?
Well, in Ireland, if, say, a former hurling great owns a pub, they will be there. Pulling pints.
I was in Bergen in Norway for transfer deadline day last week, and while walking the streets of Bergen, chanced upon the Steve Perryman sports shop.
All right, was Steve there?
He was not. You can imagine my disappointment.
I can. I'm disappointed that I didn't see this game, because it was live on TV as well. It featured the footballing talents of Tino Asprilia for Steve Harper's...
Did Steve Harper actually get to play, or was he on the bench?
That's not an easy shot, is it? Poor chap, he has his testimonial. They have to bring that up. The fact that Tino Asprilia has played more for Newcastle in the last decade than Steve Harper is neither here nor there.
Well, Steve Harper makes a very good argument when people do get on his case about that. He says, you know, it's my boyhood club. I spent, 20 years there, played for them 5 times. And what kid growing up in Newcastle wouldn't dream of that?
Well, indeed.
Fair point.
Indeed. Anyway, absolutely terrific, and it all went to charity as well. So it's a thumbs up. I can only imagine that the reason that they were able to attract the tremendous Milan Gloria side was the fact that some of the money went to the Milan Foundation. But all credit to Newcastle, who a lot of people feel couldn't organise many functions in various locations, but they certainly organised this one very, very well. Almost as exciting as the Milan Gloria team is the producer Ben namesake. Team. Can I call it that? I think I possibly can. You'll recall we had a little bit of confusion about the overabundance, really, of people called James Max something in the world of Premier League football. And people have been commenting on the fact that it's not only James McSomethings, but also the Sissokos, the Cissés, the Kamaras. Producer Ben's actually compiled an 11 of them, with substitutes on the bench and all, are playing in a 1-2-3-4 formation. That's Kamoka Kamara as the goalkeeper. Ali Sissoko as the lone defender, with ahead of him a couple of defensive midfielders, Momo Sissoko and Khalifa Cisse. Then in the midfield, yikes, it's James McCarthy, James MacArthur and James McLean. Then up front, Titi Kamara and Kay Kamara, and Djibril Cisse and Papi Cisse. And then on the bench, more people called Cisse, Sissoko and Kamara.
What's the team called?
I don't know what the team's called. What's the team called?
Cisco.
Aztec Kamara. Would they be in the Mexican League?
Yeah, cool. Hands up, who's excited about the big weekend in Italy? Oh, I am. Because you've got the Derby of Italy. The Derby of Italy at San Siro, Inter Juventus. Because we all expected Juve to start well, but Inter are off on a flyer. They haven't conceded a goal yet. They've won both their games. Walter Mazzarri is being hailed as a genius for taking a team that was ninth last year and conceded more goals than all the teams that got relegated put together. And that's only a slight exaggeration. And now they're looking watertight and challenging Juve for pole position. Juve, meanwhile, are going to be probably without Mika Vucinic after he sustained an injury this week on international duty. Could be the last game, I'm beginning to lose you here, aren't I, of Massimo Moratti's time as president of Inter, because after this match, the Indonesian magnate, in the financial sense, not... You know, he doesn't attract metal. He's not in a kind of X-Men.
Money's made of metal.
Superpowers thing.
Money's made of metal.
That's true.
Yeah.
But anyway, and he's actually spending a certain amount of it as opposed to attracting it. In this case, Eric Tuhir, I think that's how you pronounce it, he will be taking over as the majority shareholder of the club. But that's not the game we're doing live Sunday night on noted TV channel BT Sport. We're going to be doing Sampdoria Genoa, Derby della Lanterna, the Genoese derby. And they're both doing absolutely rubbish so far, so that'll be good. Could see manager Fabio Liverani. We talked about this the other day. Get the chop. Producer Ben says, will it be chopped, Liverani?
Has anyone been sacked initially yet this season?
Has anyone been sacked? No, not yet. No, strangely. And we've had two games already. But it's only a matter of time. James Horncastle is going to be joining the punditry panel for that show. Boy, you wouldn't want to miss that. Wow. That's it for part two. The Premier League awaits us in part three. So let's not delay. Aha! The Premier League returns. Tottenham, West Brom and Hull. Okay. Aha! The Premier League returns. Here's an interesting stat, courtesy of whoscored.com. There are only three teams in all of Europe's top five leagues that have not scored a single goal from open play this season. Jacob, can you name them?
Tottenham, West Brom and Hull.
That's remarkable. It is. Those three Premier League teams. Who'd have thought?
Us.
Would you have thought that?
Yeah, because I just said it.
Well, yeah, but and who'd have thought implies before it happened, who would have thought that would come
to
be the
case? Well, West Brom don't have any strikers, and Hull are promoted. And,
all right, but Spurs then.
Spurs. Yeah. Well, they haven't got their big players in yet, have they?
Well, haven't they?
Lamella and Eriksen.
That's true.
Yeah, Andros Townsend is.
And they've got a game coming up this weekend against Norwich. Do you see the introduction of Lamella and Eriksen there? Do you see it making a difference? What do you think AVB is going to do?
I think, well, Norwich have had a couple of good results that White Hart Lane the last two seasons. Won there 2 years ago and got a late draw there last season. But at the same time, they're not very good away from home.
But they have been at White Hart Lane.
Yeah. They haven't been that good away from home, though, and it was a disappointing defeat against Hull, against 10 men, in their first and only home away game this season. Spurs again were disappointing against Arsenal, and but you would imagine that Lamella would play. And although I heard that Eriksen wasn't that great for Denmark this week against Armenia,
right?
Yeah, I could be completely wrong, but that's what I saw in a couple of Danish sources.
Got to be Spurs, though, Ian.
I would have thought so. And there's nothing
just like it in the North London derby. It had to be Spurs.
Yeah, I thought so then as well. So take this with a pinch of salt. But there's so much talent in that Tottenham team. But what they need now is about 10, 15 games to gel. You can see the qualities that they have, but it's not quite linking up. They can't quite get Soldado in as much as they want. They had some good news in the fact that Kapu, who was brilliant against Swansea, isn't injured for quite as long as they thought, because that looked like a season ender. That was a nasty one he picked up. But they've got everything in all departments. They've got pace and invention and strength and speed, and I think they will get back on the horse this weekend.
It's going to be it's going to take time for AVB to make them blend, and the problem is, from a managerial point of view, they've had no time to work with these players. They've just come in, a lot of them, and they've all gone off again on international duty. I'm just thinking back to last season, when it was precisely following an international break that Chris Hughton started a great run of results with Norwich. Because when everybody else was off taking a holiday or whatever, their players were away, he had the Canaries on the training ground and he was drilling them, you know, in a tactical sense anyway, and came out.
Now there's an image.
But anyway, they had like six wins in a row or something like that. You check the figures, listeners.
They've had a very good transfer window. The calibre of players. I mean, Nathan Redmond being a superb signing. With all due respect to Norwich fans, I'm surprised that he didn't go higher up the food chain.
But, interesting.
Because once he settles, he's still very, very raw. And as long as he doesn't...
he was getting tripped.
That's going to leave you uncomfortable and scared.
Anyway, so there you go. I'm just trying to talk up the Canaries' chances there at White Hart Lane. What do you think, Barry?
I would go for a Tottenham win.
Okay. Now, there are some interesting fixtures. Scratch away at the surface. Some interesting fixtures. Everton-Chelsea in what would be the Lukaku derby, only he can't play because he's on loan from Chelsea, I'm imagining. Everton struggling to readjust to life without Marouane Fellaini. They've got Gareth Barry instead. And McCarthy. And Lukaku, but he can't play. They've not had the greatest of starts, have they, the Toffees? What's this? No notes on Everton-Chelsea. We won't come to you on that one, Barry. Jacob, you're ready to roll on this, aren't you?
What's the question?
Everton-Chelsea.
That's not a question.
kind of is.
I think Everton have bought well in the transfer window. I don't think Fellaini will be that huge a loss. Mm. McCarthy's great signing. But I still don't think they'll be Chelsea. Everton could really do with a win. Roberto Martinez seems to have settled in well there, has made some shrewd purchases, but they still haven't won a game yet.
Your mate Samuel Eto'o will be playing.
Oh.
He may well be, yes.
Right, because you interviewed him on Monday.
Yes.
And how did that go?
I can't tell you.
Ah. Why is that, Barry?
Because it's embargoed.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Until when?
Friday evening.
Oh.
Thanks, Barry.
The things I know about Samuel Eto'o that I've had to keep to myself.
What kind of thing can't you tell us?
I can't tell you anything.
Oh, he's good. He's very good. I want to talk a little bit about the game at the Britannia Stadium, Stoke against Man City.
That's an interesting one because it's obviously a needle match.
Mm.
Mark Hughes he'll pretend it doesn't matter, the fact that he was shafted by Manchester City, but we all know that deep down it does. And if Stoke win, it will be his 100th league win, Premier League win as a manager.
Right. Well, they're hovering on the edge of the top four, the Potters, at the moment, very excitingly. Man City, in their last away game, came unstuck against Cardiff.
Set pieces, again, was their undoing in that game.
Right.
Yeah, and they were unconvincing against Hull.
Very unconvincing against Hull.
Yeah. I don't think they've won at the Britannia Stadium. It's not a game they enjoy. Not a game that many people enjoy, but particularly Manchester City.
Remember that incredible Peter Crouch goal against them?
Yeah.
But Stoke are different now, aren't they?
But they're still scoring from set pieces. Stoke,
a little bit different, but...
I mean, they're hardly Barcelona right now, but they do keep trying to play football. It's quite disconcerting.
There was this suggestion that maybe Pellegrini didn't really know what the Premier League was, that he was caught out a little bit by the realities of this new footballing environment he'd gone into after that Cardiff defeat, in which case... trip to the Britannia is pretty much the acid test,
that
is it not?
Pretty much bringing him up to speed, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Big test for Joe Hart.
Absolutely. Right, what do we think?
It'll be hard if they play like they have, you know, they have done at the Britannia Stadium in the last few years, especially if, you know, the set pieces are flying in from Charlie Adam and they're crowding Hart, which is what Cardiff did quite well in for those two goals that Fraser Campbell scored.
Mm. He dealt with crowding pretty well, I thought, against Ukraine.
More assured on Tuesday night after the sort of dodgy first 5 or 10 minutes.
What about the bit where he went up against the Ukraine player for the ball?
I think that was in the first 5 or 10.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
But that wasn't particularly encouraging.
No, indeed not. Barry?
I think if Manchester City play the same way they did against Hull and Cardiff, they will lose.
Crikey. Ian?
I can see a spirited draw there.
Good news. Hull-Cardiff, clash of two newly promoted sides. Points could prove crucial come the end of the season. But we won't dwell on that right now. Neither will we on Fulham-West Brom, unless you particularly want to. Do you want to, anyone?
No. Well, Fulham are currently in the middle of their worst top-flight home run since 1961-62. They have lost their last five at home.
Have they?
Yeah.
You always think of Craven Cottage as a fortress cottage.
Mm.
Well, no, I think of it as a quaint...
Craven Fortress, I think.
Yeah. Quiet, leafy cottage with primrose.
It's a rubbish name, isn't it? Craven meaning basically cowardly. Yeah. You know, why would you have your ground called like Cowardly Cottage?
Full sense of security.
Perhaps so. In other news, West Brom yet to score, we just said... mentioned that might not be the greatest game. Aston Villa are taking on Newcastle. That's a great opportunity for the Villains to bounce back from what's been a difficult run of games. They had that brilliant start away to Arsenal, but then matches against Chelsea and Liverpool brought defeat. Don't know what you think about that.
Well, in the same run of fixtures last season, they got no points at all. So they got three this season. So that's a genuine improvement.
They haven't really played badly in any of those games either. They're a very, very good side, Villa. Very well drilled, very composed, and I can't get the image of Chris Hughton out of my head.
Right.
This is awful.
Okay.
I think they'll batter Newcastle.
Really?
To be honest, yeah, I really do. I'm very, very concerned for Newcastle at the moment, the summer that they've had, the discontent there. Yeah. I think that could be 3-4-0.
The good news is that they at least have a manager standing by should anything untoward happen to them.
Yes, exactly. It's spare, like a parachute.
Yeah. Southampton are hosting West Ham. Jacob, will you be going along to that game?
I will be. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. How do you see it unfolding?
I think it will be 1-1.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd be probably quite happy with that result, would you?
No, I think that Southampton struggle a little bit against teams that come back and, particularly at St Mary's, teams that come back and defend and force them to play in front of them. I think when the wins they've had under Pochettino have been those great wins against City and Liverpool and Chelsea, the ones that have stood out alongside a couple of victories over West Brom and Reading away from home.
Hmm.
But I think possibly what's occurred is that those top teams give you a little bit more space to play because they come out to play and themselves, they want to attack. I've seen them against QPR under Pochettino at home and they lost 2-1. They're shocking. They weren't very good against Sunderland a couple of weeks ago. Similar kind of physical side that sit back, and you just wonder as well whether he's going to be able to fit Osvaldo and Lambert into the side, even though he claims that that's the plan. Similarly, that, you know, seeing Jack Cork out the side for Wanyama, and Cork and Schneiderlin were a great partnership last season.
Update me on the situation up front with Carlton Cole. He's come back in, but then gone out again.
I just wonder what he was doing all summer, Carlton Cole, for not passing that fitness test, and also why West Ham. Obviously, they would have known him, and they would have known what it would take, surely, to get him up to speed.
Mm.
Weird situation.
And Andy Carroll, rather.
Yeah, it's the full extent of that injury is not come back yet, but
okay,
it possibly won't be seen for.
In the meantime, they've signed the out of contract Mladen Petric.
Yeah, 5 goals for Fulham
in 10 starts.
Yeah, but there were a lot of substitute appearances as well. I don't know. He's talented, but I think they'd probably have to adapt the style of play to get the best out of him. Don't think he's someone that you can go direct with, maybe.
Right, okay. Okay. Sunderland are hosting Arsenal in what could be the debut for Mesut Ozil. That's quite exciting, isn't it?
They're very excited about him over there. There's people putting omelettes over their names all over the place on Twitter.
It's a tough ground to go, though.
Is it?
No, stadium.
I don't think so.
No.
Well, Sunderland started the season. They had three nice easy games for Di Canio to leave his sort of mark and imprimatur, and they've managed to get 1 point out of those and been pretty rubbish. Di Canio's publicly criticised his players, and now their next 4 games are Arsenal, West Brom, Liverpool, and Man U. So they could be on all sorts of bother by the time those that run of games ends. But yeah, I think everyone's looking forward to seeing Ozil playing.
Yeah.
How will he fit in?
Well, this kind of fixture, traditionally, the kind of robust opponents that Arsenal are thought to struggle against. Do you think that's a fair reading of this particular encounter?
It can be, but I think Sunderland, as Barry says, they're a bit all over the place at the moment. I don't know how often Di Canio can hang his players out to dry and disassociate himself from their ineptitude before that starts to have an effect on the dressing room, because there's going to come a point where they're just going to stop listening. You can only get shouted at so many times before it all just starts to wash over you. And Arsenal aren't that weak anymore. The mental frailty that they were suffering midway through last season, that Wenger even admitted they were suffering, seems to have gone. Their response to the opening day defeat has been absolutely tremendous. So, I love the North East. Lived up there for 2.5 years, but they're going to have a horrible weekend this time around.
All right. Barry, are you excited by Fabio Barini joining the Black Cats?
You could hook me up to all sorts of medical monitoring equipment. Show me a picture of Fabio Barini wearing a Sunderland shirt and nothing would.
Nothing? Zippo?
No. But, you know, I'm like Ian. I'm losing my enthusiasm for not football, but just Sunderland.
Really? Okay. Let's see if this weekend.
It's just dispiriting. I was so optimistic.
Yep.
And now they've got 1 point out of 9. It's, you know.
It's early days, though, Barry. Early days.
Yeah, but I can see things getting a lot worse.
Well, maybe they'll have to before they get better. Man United are hosting Crystal Palace. Now, Palace are coming off a big win. United aren't. They don't have any Rooney. They don't have any creativity as yet.
Going to win.
And they're going to win?
Yeah.
Okay. You sure?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not so sure about that.
Tell us, Barry, why?
Well, I was quite impressed with Crystal Palace in their match. Their win over Sunderland. Admittedly, Sunderland were very poor. But I like the cut of that Palace side's jib. They've been unlucky in so much as they bought Jack Hunt, full-back from Huddersfield, and he's, without kicking a ball for them in anger, has injured himself and is out for the season. So I'd imagine Ian Holloway is going to be very fed up over that. There are still rumours going on that him and the Palace chairman, is it Steve Parish, aren't speaking to each other. Holloway denied that emphatically after the Sunderland game, and Parish has since denied it's true. Said, you know, he said we spoke a lot on transfer deadline day.
He said we spoke 123 times on transfer deadline day, which is worryingly precise.
It's almost as if the first three numbers he thought of were 1, 2, and 3, and he put them together.
You old cynic.
So I'm going to possibly make a complete fool of myself and suggest Palace will draw or win that game.
My, that would be quite a result there for Ian Holloway on what has been their birthday week, of course. Tuesday saw the anniversary of their founding. Also big game this, because it could, if David Moyes was of a like mind, see them go up against their former wunderkind, Wilfried Zaha. But he won't be, will he, David Moyes? He's not going to put Zaha in there, is he?
Difficult to say, and I can't quite go along with Barry and see Crystal Palace winning this, but I think
he thinks they're going to draw, don't you, Barry?
Yeah. But it's going to be one of those ones where journalists in the press box are tentatively writing their Moyes in crisis in the 70th minute of a turgid 0-0, and then suddenly United step up, get two, and it all looks quite comfortable.
2-0 at half time.
How is the press box at Old Trafford, Ian?
The press box is very, very nice, very open. The press lounge, on the other hand, is tiny. It's like a staff canteen in a regional Sainsbury's.
Really?
Yeah, when compared to Arsenal, which is like a five-star lounge.
Yeah. Is it nicer than Chelsea Arsenal's?
Arsenal's much bigger. Chelsea's is very intimate, low ceiling. The players wander in and out every now and then. But the buffet at Chelsea, my God, I could write epic poems about that buffet.
Maybe you should.
I think I will. I need the work.
All right. Swansea-Liverpool. Let's finish off with a bit of Swansea-Liverpool. An emotional return to South West Wales for Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, emotional reunion for Jonjo Shelvey.
All right, what else you got?
Rodgers is undefeated in this fixture since leaving Swansea.
How many times has he played it?
Two, three?
In this fixture, wouldn't it be once?
They lost to Swansea in the Cup last season.
Oh, I see, because in the League Cup. Yeah. Was that? Yeah, right. So that's...
They aren't. He isn't undefeated.
I'm fascinated to see Mamadou Sakho, even, if he starts. Because he is the... I think Barry Fry once said of Gary Breen, he would head a jumbo jet away if it came into the penalty area. Mamadou Sakho is that kind of centre-back.
Really?
But very, very slow turning circle and liable for mistakes. So he's either going to be brilliant or wretched.
Right. And if Swansea have got their nippy passing thing on, that could be...
It could baffle him.
Right. Interesting. Are they bottom of the table at the moment, Swansea?
No, West Brom are, I think.
Oh, right, okay. West Brom. Followed by Swansea?
No, followed by Sunderland.
Followed by Swansea?
Possibly.
Okay, good. Have you got, in your big pager notes there, Barry, have you got anything on Swansea-Liverpool?
Brendan Rodgers is undefeated in this fixture, which is apparently wrong.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, if Liverpool win this, it'll be their sixth Premier League win in a row, which should be their best run since 2006 when they won 9 in a row.
Wow. If they win this game, it'll be their best ever Premier League start, which I know the kind of stat that annoys a lot of people, and rightly so, because they're, I think, the best ever start since the advent of the Premier League was 93-94 when they got 12 points after 5 games, so they would have 12 after only 4.
Well, you see, the worry...
It's a great start, isn't it?
If you want to rain on their parade, though, you could say that, like, every season you have this... One team wins the Bat Out of Hell award for accumulating loads of points very early in the season, and then they fall away and end up nearly getting relegated. So it looks like it's Liverpool's turn this season.
Because their fixtures have been quite kind to them so far. I know they played Man United.
You still have to win them, and they beat Manchester United. I mean,
they very
as I said
nearly didn't beat Stoke. Well, there was that penalty which Mignolet saved.
Yeah.
Had that gone in. But then we're in the realms of ifs and buts here, aren't we?
And if ifs and ands were pots and pans, then we'd all be tinkers. Are you allowed to say tinkers?
I think you probably are. I can't see why you wouldn't be allowed to. Equally, if my grandfather had 3 balls, he'd have been a pinball machine.
If my Aunt Martha had balls, she'd be my Uncle Arthur.
Well, there you go. All right, on that philosophical note, let's draw to an end today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks to Jacob, Ian and Barry for joining us, and producer Ben. We'll be back on Monday with our reaction to all the excitements of the weekend. Do join us then. Bye for now.